Okay, welcome to the Strategic Business Advisor podcast. It's been a few months. I had some knee issues, surgery and what have you, and I'm back. And my guest today is Mark Robertson. Mark is an executive coach based in Tennessee. And I just want to say welcome to you, Mark. Glad we could finally get together.
Yeah, thanks, Kerry. Me too. Really excited. We've been trying to put this thing together for several months, huh? So between your knees and my knees, finally, we found a little window where we could get it done. So I'm excited to be here, man. It's been a long time since I've seen you.
Yeah, same here. So listen, you were doing executive coaching now. You're not just a general business consultant. You actually coach just executives.
Yep.
So
yep.
For those who are maybe listening, watching, give us what does that mean, your executive coach?
Yeah. So you know what? Honestly, Kerry, in its simplest form, the way I talk about it these days, I'm in the business of adult behavior change, adult habit change for senior leaders in companies, honestly. And so I actually work with all levels of organizations, but my specialty is with senior leaders and their leadership teams. And so C-suite or right below them, like director level. It depends on the title with the industry and the organization. Director, senior VP, that kind of group. Really, those with the authority to make a significant change in the organization. So I work with them almost entirely in the context of their leadership development. So these are men and women who realize that they've got some, I don't know if limitations is a word, but they're bumping up against their old habits of leadership that aren't really working as well anymore. And they realize they need to grow and learn. And so they're reaching out to somebody like me to help them do. I don't know if that gives you enough, but I can certainly expand on that.
No, that makes a lot of sense to me. So basically what happens is they start to, the thing I always look for and what I do is what I look for is what's not working. Where's the dysfunction in the business?
Absolutely.
You know, what's not working? There's no use. Why you want to improve on something that's working, especially stuff that's working well, you know, you might screw it up. But what's a dysfunction? Where are the breakdowns? And let's start there. What do you find is generally the most common cause of the dysfunction of where they start seeing problems in their leadership?
Yeah. So let me put a little context around that if I can, to really talk about my niche. And you're familiar with this niche given how we met. So the idea when we really look at what do leaders get paid to do in today's world, and it's been this way for a while, but they really get paid to have effective conversations. So then to me, coaching is about their learning or growth in all things conversation. It involves everything. The speaking side, the listening side, the attitude or morale or the mood, as we talk about it, of their conversations. The culture of the organization is getting shaped by those conversations. So there's that piece, which is, I'm working with them a lot when they realize their conversations aren't as effective as they need to be. And there's a lot of places they aren't. But then I think the other piece to talk about that's so important as well is that those conversations are always starting, maintaining, deepening, or eroding their working relationships. And so I talk about it with my clients these days, like I'm working on all things conversation and relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And so some of the stuff that they realize is not working is when they have execution issues. It's one of the biggest things I work on with my clients when they're not producing the results they say they want to produce on time in the right way. Those are some really critical conversations I dig into my clients with. Sometimes we're really looking at individually for them, a really massive amount of stress and overwhelm. They feel like they can't get their hands around it to solve it or change it, or more pervasively pushed all the way down into their organization. There's so much to do and there's not enough time to do this one too, like trust. Like oftentimes a big one is when they realize I don't trust these people or they don't trust me. It's affecting our results. Or I've got members of my leadership team that clearly are not trusting each other or not talking to each other. And it's really getting in the way of what we're trying to do here. So those are some of the typical things that I'll hear as leaders are reaching out to me.
Right. Yeah, especially as the organization gets bigger and you need more managers, supervisors, people in there. The thing I've noticed is that everybody creates their own little fiefdom and they get into these turf wars. And that's always dysfunctional. And the owner gets stuck and he can't, what is he going to do? Tell them all grow up? You know, they generally get pulled into the different sides and different times.
Yeah.
And again, My big contention is that business owners generally start a business because they're good at something.
Yep.
That does not include managing a business. They're good at sales. They're good at construction. They're good at manufacturing. They're good at relationship building between customers and wholesalers and all that kind of stuff. but they're not good. They haven't been to school to learn how to, as you say, have effective conversations, manage relationships with their employees, build an effective organization, procedures, all that kind of, they don't know how to, they don't do any of that. They don't have, again, what makes them a great entrepreneur makes them a horrible manager.
I think you're right on point.
Skill sets are just almost polar opposite. A great manager, not going to be a very good entrepreneur. And a great entrepreneur, I mean, you find it's very rare that you find somebody who's really good entrepreneur, really good manager, all in one person, just because skill sets are so different.
Yeah. You know what? You make me think about one of the differences between those is, again, the conversations, right? There are a set of conversations that managers are involved in and really good at. And those are, in large part, different conversations than the conversations that entrepreneurs are really good at. Right. I think both are learnable, but I would tend to agree with you that you don't usually see the mixture. It takes a pretty agile person, an agile leader that's really good at both of those.
Yeah. Somebody who's, again, I would think you'd have to be really aware of the distinctions and be able to hop back and forth. And how many people are aware of the distinctions like that?
That's the other piece that I think you were alluding to. I've been doing this for 24 years now, Kerry, and it amazes me that while this is the essence of leadership, being able to have effective conversations, having a high level of self-awareness and know what you're doing, and then building those relationships, but nobody taught us this stuff. They didn't teach us this. And so here we got all these human beings doing their best out there trying to create good results for organizations equipped with the wrong set of tools. And so you're right. Nobody's got these distinctions. That's part of why I feel so grateful having been exposed to them in the early 90s through some of the work I did with you and Papani and Chuck and some of those other people.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Here's the other problem is because they've created a successful business, they think they know best. They think they know what's best for the business.
Yeah.
And generally, they want somebody who can come in and fix all these other people over here because I'm just fine.
Yep.
And a lot of times, to me, you're going to get the most effective change in an organization when you can get that one leader or that owner or whatever's at the top. When you get that to change, the rest of the organization will change with it because of what they tolerate, of what they're expecting and they're demanding and what they're willing to put up with, that is going to get created in the organization.
I totally agree, man. I'm thinking about a snappy way to respond to that, but I think it comes down to this. It's a function of who they are, right? It's a function of the observer that they are, that they take to that organization every day as a leader. And I discovered early on when I started doing coaching and working with people, as I told you earlier, I worked at all levels of the organization, but I got frustrated after a few years working with some of the lower levels of those guys and gals that didn't have the authority to influence the organization. We'd make some headway, but they were always capped by their boss. So you're absolutely right. That's now why I really only want to work with those people that see what's going on, that see that they probably are the bigger factor, bigger influence of what's working and what's not working in the organization. And they're committed to start with themselves.
That's the key. If they think I'm good, it's everybody else, you're not going to get anywhere.
They're not my client, to be honest with you. They're not going to be my client.
So how do you, what's been your experience? How do you get the owner or the people at the top to see that it's going to be them that has to change and that's what's going to change the organization?
You know, Kay, honestly, I'm not sure I can get them to see that. To be truthful with you, like my experience has been when I answer the phone and these people are calling me, they've already seen that. And my experience has been typically because their colleague or their friend that they trust, they've reached out to and said, hey, I need help. I'm stuck. I got a problem. But again, you can hear already they've got some recognition that it's me and I need some help. Having said that, there's a little bit of I can get them to see that if they're just talking to me about I've got these issues and challenges, and then as a coach, I'm gonna at some point bring that conversation back around to them and say something like, so I hear you, you're talking about all these challenges and issues you got. What's your view of that? What's going on? What are you doing to contribute? What's your role in all of that? Which can be the thump across the forehead sometimes that they're not getting from any of their people because they're scared to tell them honestly what's going on. And so sometimes that conversation I have with them wakes them up and has them go, oh, wow, okay, yeah, it's me. I'm the challenger, I'm the issue. But to what you said earlier, if they're already convinced they're right and it's just others that need to change, they're not open to learning.
Yeah.
So we're not working together.
Yeah, I think that's the bitter pill that a lot of owners have a really hard time swallowing a lot of times. And it's going to take somebody from the outside to change them or to work with them to where they can change, so the organization can change. Because given the results of what's been happening, they created the organization out of who they are and what they're willing to accept and demand and everything else. And they can't see how they've created some dysfunction. The dysfunction is built in because of the way that they are.
Yep.
And if you can't see it, you can't fix it.
Nope.
And that's, to me, that's the other thing that I see they have a hard time doing because they built the business. They've been there since the start. It's their baby. How could I not see everything? Well, yep. You get exactly, that's exactly how you're blind. You think you should, you think you are seeing everything, but you're not. Not as observers of ourselves, as the expression goes, we're worse.
That's it. It's inherently built into this whole idea of trying to observe yourself, right? The way I talk about it these days is, in some ways, our biology, the way we're biologically structured, limits my clients from being able to do the very thing that I always ask them to do, which is step outside, take a more powerful look at yourself. Because of the way we're structured, that's really hard to do. And what you're pointing to, Chalmers used to say this. So Chalmers and I used to be business partners, right?
Right.
He's the first person I heard say this, which is, success is a learning disability. And I think it's right on point. It's like, the more successful they are, business owners are convinced that I got this and I know the best way to do this. And so they're not open to learning.
Yeah, like my experience with, and again, no insult to the doctors out there, but my experience with doctors, because they make a lot of money, they think they know a lot about money and they don't.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the whole thing with business owners, because of that blindness of they think they know everything or they should know everything because it's their business and they've been there since the beginning and stuff, they don't see the need. A lot of times they don't see the need, or they don't see the use, they don't see the benefit of some outside coach coming in and helping them be a better observer. One of the things I use to use my hands a lot, it's like your language and everything, that all your interpretations, all that stuff, you can't see it, but everybody else can.
Absolutely.
I said, it's like all that stuff is back here. You can't see it happening. Guess what? Everybody else can. You think it's like invisible and you got it all hidden, but it's not. It's right back here where you can't see it. And everybody else is like, hey, man.
Hey, take a look. What are you talking about? So I'll interject this into the conversation now. I was thinking, as you were saying, like, so what does make them sometimes wake up and see it? And so I'll use the word suffering. I think, and you've heard the old cultural expression, it's been around for years, when the pain to change is less than the pain to stay the same, you change. And so it's some version of that. It's once they get a certain amount of suffering and probably trying to do it themselves again and again, and it's not working, that usually is the moment where they go, I need help. And so they reach out to friends and colleagues they trust. And that's often where they find me, is somebody that I've worked with before. And they say, hey, I got this guy, he's a coach, Mark. Give him a call, because I've been doing this 24 years and 90% or more of my business has come through word of mouth.
Really?
I do very little marketing and advertising. So
that's great.
Yeah. The question you're asking about, you know, what is it that wakes them up that they need help, they need change, is an interesting thing to try to answer, right?
Yeah. And again, the pain has to get great enough for them to find, okay, I need help. A lot of times, again, my own experience, I've seen some people suffer a whole lot, like almost to the point of the business is driven in the ground.
Absolutely.
It's when they can see that, they're about to crash land. That's when they say, hey, I need help.
And I don't know if you would say this about yourself, but I've seen that in myself, in my own business. I suffer from the very thing you're talking about. I love coaching. I want to do coaching. But I had a realization a few years into it, like, I'm running a business, not just coaching. And so how do I, and then I thought, I have to do all these other things as well. Marketing, administration, like some of this I'm not even interested in doing. And I got caught in this whole, if it's going to get done, I have to do it, to the point of where I had run myself, not myself personally, into the ground, but my business was in bad shape and I was suffering a ton. And that's what it took for me one day to find, remember where I was at. I was in my office in my other house. I remember realizing, Mark, you're doing the thing you always talk about with your clients. If you keep doing the same thing over and over again, waiting for a different outcome, it's insane. And I did that for 4 years before it finally landed. So I'm not I don't think you and I aren't immune from it either.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. As my old man used to tell me when I was a teenager into my early 20s, a hard head makes for a soft ass. And yours must be getting mushy.
Who told you that?
My dad. Throughout teenagehood, you do something stupid because you just being a hard head about something. He says, a hard head makes for a soft ass. And yours must be getting mushy.
Yeah.
And for a long time, when I was a teenager, I don't know if that's some stupid saying the old man had. I got in my 20s, oh, yeah.
He knew what he was talking about. But I'll throw this at you. Like, wouldn't you agree, though, too, like the other side of that is it takes a bit of that hard-headedness or confidence in self to even launch your own business. It can be the shadow side of that is not knowing when you need to get help.
Yeah, what's the old Chinese saying? Every gift is a curse. Every curse is a gift. So yeah, there's the double-edged sword, so to speak. It cuts both ways. Yeah, it's great to be hard-headed and determined, and you're going to get what you want when you want, like you want, and you go jump off the cliff and start flapping, and yeah, you can make yourself fly. If there's some dysfunction in the process and you just keep doing it, the pain just keeps getting worse.
Absolutely.
And you see all kinds of ways that they try and bandage it up, paper it over. Firing people, you have a big revolving door in certain areas, can't keep anybody. They'll spend a bunch of money on stuff they don't need that they think is going to fix it.
Yeah. And it's what you said. All this is going on, but they cannot see it. That's the critical. Everybody else can see it, but they can't see it. It's that moment of how do you help them see it? What does it take for them to see it? That's so critical.
Right. Yeah. The thing about coaching, and especially as an executive coach, you have to be somehow produce a mirror for them to see how other people see them.
Yep.
You know, it's when you can produce that mirror form, it's holy shit.
Yep.
That's what I look like. Yeah. I mean, everyone's been seeing this? Yeah.
I'll share my thought around that and get your reaction to it. It's literally not a mirror. Like, I don't hold up a real mirror to my clients, but I think it has to do then with my conversational abilities to engage them that creates the mirror. And a lot of times I find with executives, senior leaders, it's really directly challenging them in a way that they don't feel threatened by it, but it's like they need to hear. I'm about to make up some words here, but I think you get what I'm saying. Like just point blank directly saying, this is BS. You know, this is BS, but you probably don't have anybody else telling you this is BS. And you're paying me to tell you this is BS.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're the owner and you haven't really created a very safe space for people to give you feedback like that, you're not going to get any. So you don't think there's any out there.
Nope.
But there's always a ton out there.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to actually listen and make it okay for people to speak up, give you feedback.
And those are the best leaders I run across. Those are the ones I like to work with, honestly.
Yeah. They've got to be the easiest, huh?
Yeah, they're the highly self-aware ones that listen, that invite. They're not perfect. They do some of the same stuff we're talking about, but that listen, that have a sense of my people are the most important thing here, and I want to take care of them, and I want to help them grow. So there's that. They have all those qualities to them that are obviously the easiest to work with, but they're the kind of clients that I want to work with. They want to be really good leaders and make a contribution to the people that they're leading.
Yeah, and then you get the megalomaniacal types. It's never their fault. It's always their people's fault. They got the dumbest people on the planet working for them. What's amazing is I worked with a guy for a few months. It was mainly on the financial side, getting some dashboards set up and that kind of stuff. But there was opportunities to do a little bit of coaching with him, and he always went right to these people are stupid. Generally with him, within about 6 weeks, he puts in the big pile of the stupid and the useless and what have you, but he wouldn't get rid of them. He liked having around to have a dog to whip, so to speak, and blame stuff on. And these people, and he paid really well. And what was common throughout his people were they were all at some level a doormat, and they were willing to sit there and take it.
Of course.
Because the people had any kind of self-respect, self-esteem, they put up with him for about a day.
Yes, they'd be gone. They'd be gone. You make me think of the term, you've probably heard it, the golden handcuffs, right? Like you pay them well enough, they'll put up with all that crap for a while.
So. Yeah, and then got upset when this one long-term employee quit because he jumped her. He just reamed her out in front of a room full of people. Mm. And then she quit. He was insulted that she quit. What's wrong with her?
Yeah.
You can't take a little feedback.
Were you ever able to pierce that? And
yeah, no, I think this guy was sociopath. I mean, he was definitely narcissistic, but yeah, I think he was sociopathic to where it was, what's the thing? His pathology was strong.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, he was always fighting with everybody, and he loved to fight.
Wow.
Yeah, he just loved to fight. So yeah, after about, I don't know, 10 months or so, it's like, I really can't help you anymore. I've set some stuff up, and some of the other stuff you're asking is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to know, he had a construction company. He wanted to have a reporting system such that he would have his WIP report, as he said. He could have a daily WIP report down to the penny. So, no, you want to hire an army of accountants and put people in there. Every job has a job accountant in there, scanning and sending stuff in. You have another army in your office putting all that together in a report for you every day.
Wow.
Now, you can get close, but you're not going to get, I want it to the penny. We reconcile to the penny, don't we? The bank account to the penny. Yeah, we do. You're dealing with a specific amount of data that's already been processed.
Yeah.
You're not trying to keep up live. Anyway, he was out of it.
So, I wouldn't want to work for that guy. No.
So. Yeah. And after a while, I didn't like, not enjoy the challenge at first, but after a while, it's nah.
Good one for you to let go as a client.
Yeah, I got to go. Really nothing else I can do to help you.
Yeah, yeah.
So what have we been talking about, some of the challenges of the executive coaching field. What are some of your biggest wins? What are some of your most satisfying moments?
I think that's a broad question. And when I think of on an individual level, I don't know why this actually isn't, this is a lawyer actually that I worked with, and I won't go into details, but something really catastrophic happened in his life and his family. And I helped work him through that. Through, hopefully this isn't too personal, but through forgiveness of himself and letting go. It was actually the death of a family member that he felt responsible for. And so there's a non-business win, if you will, but that always sticks out to me as one of the most powerful clients I've had in the work that we did around that. When I think about more leaders in corporations or organizations and teams, what comes up for me, Carrie, is as opposed to a specific acute thing, is more clients that I've had for a long time. Like I've got one client that I've had here in Nashville for 15 years. It's a podiatry insurance company that was then bought by a larger insurance company. I've been working with all levels of that organization, but their leader and their leadership team for 15 years now. And some of my wins are like to refer a strategic planning consultant to them, and he'll go work with them. And he says, man, I can see your fingerprints all over them. And their feedback is, his feedback and the people on his team's feedback is, man, it's been amazing. You've helped us build, work together so much more effectively. We're quicker at doing what we're doing. We're better at what we're doing. I've helped them decide on, do we want to buy this other company to bring in as a line of business or do we not? I've worked with his right-hand person, and she and I, it was in policy services and underwriting. And I worked with her individually, worked with some of her leaders directly. And then we did a whole business unit team learning and growth thing over about a 6 to 9 month period to help them all be able to communicate with these distinctions more effectively. And that has ripple effects through everything. You hear people talking about repairing relationships, communicating more effectively. And I know as I'm answering this, I'm hearing myself say, I don't feel like I'm giving you anything all that specific.
No, you are actually, you are.
I'll give you one more if that's okay.
Sure.
I was thinking about a healthcare client that I worked with, and I was working with one of the doctors that was ancillary to the hospital, but she was an OBGYN and she worked directly. She was part of kind of the team that helped influence the direction of the hospital, but the hospital had their administrator and all their people. And through our work together, she literally went to the head nursing director and said, I realize I've been trying to get you fired now for about a year and a half, and I'm putting my sword down. I'm not doing it anymore. And here's why I've been doing that. She owned her stuff. And the head nursing director, she said, started to get emotional and said, I know you have. And she said, I've been trying to be a pain in your rear end for this whole time. And They, so literally what happened, Carrie, was like, they were contentious the whole time. I could see it. I could watch it in their interactions. I came back like a few weeks later and they were talking and engaging. And I was like, what happened? And she relayed the story to me and it was like night and day. It was like they turned that relationship 180 degrees and their ability to work together was critical to what was going on there.
Yeah. So amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's been extraordinary. It's been extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing what can happen in relationships or in businesses when people are willing to own up to the bullshit.
Absolutely.
And I guess one of the things I like to, what's the word I'm looking for? The analogy that I use in talking to business owners is that a business can be seen as a network of conversation. Yep. It's, so you have everybody shows up for the job. They've promised to do certain things. They've been promised certain things about it. Then you have to go through the whole thing of making requests, offers, promises, making good granted assessments. You have to make declarations, all that. So it's what happens where you produce dysfunction is those conversations get out of sync.
Yep.
You have one person doing this job over here and they're doing it the way that they think that should be done. They haven't been shown. There's not a standard way to do that. And it produces results that may not be in sync with other departments that gets affected by. And the manufacturing does it, and so the shipping gets thrown off, the accounting doesn't like it. And so you start getting these little turf wars within departments and it's their fault.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's so when you can get that kind of stuff coordinated, all that, and here's the problem. The business owner gets drug into that crap all the time. They hate it.
Like to solve the problem.
It's just their fault. They're getting all this stuff. The other thing they really hate this the worst, is getting drug into accounting and finance and cash flow stuff. They hate that stuff.
Typically they're, I don't say ignorant, but they're ignorant of that domain. Like that's why they hire a CFO or an accountant. You handle that. I trust you. And they get pulled into those conversations. This has been my experience anyway. They get pulled into those conversations.
And again, the business owner has to be aware of what's going on because nobody is going to take care of that business as much as they are because it's not their business. So you can hire a CFO. You can trust them all you want. They can be really good. They're not going to make the same decisions as you because it's not their business. So the way a business owner, to me, has to stay informed without getting drug into all that stuff. What I use are dashboards, where you have dashboards on cash flow, dashboards on receivables, payables, sales, all the, what are they called, KPIs, key performance indicators. Get those in dashboards weekly without fail, to where they spend maybe an hour looking at that stuff, unless there's something really wrong they want to investigate. And the other bad thing is financial statements. They don't know how to read their financial statements. And nobody, what I've seen the CFO goes, his financial statements, why don't you look them up and see if you, let me know if you have any questions tomorrow. They don't know what they're looking at. They don't know the first question to ask.
Right.
They need someone to give them a good narrative as to what the financial statements are saying, not just these are the numbers. It says that the profitability is going down, that we're spending too much money on operating expenses, whatever, that we're financially sound or we're not financially sound. We're liquid, we're not, there's something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, go ahead.
You know what you make me think about? Sounds like maybe you work with a lot of business owners, maybe of family businesses or smaller, I don't want to sound condescending, like smaller business. I'm working with sometimes small to medium sized organizations probably, but you make me think about of a common issue with almost all the leaders that I work with, which is that they get paid to have conversations. But we have to acknowledge the reality that those conversations take time, take some chunk of their capacity. And so as I work with senior leaders who have 5, 6, 7 direct reports underneath them and they have reports underneath them, there's a balance there for them to figure out how much time do I need to spend with each one of these direct reports? So which translates to me to how deep in the conversations do we need to go? So when you say dashboard, it's give me the core stuff that I need to just look at and see, and I can ask you a few questions and then I'm good. And I can, so I don't use hours and days of my time to try to monitor what the hell you're doing, you know?
or get pulled into a brush fire every day.
Or get
that's the thing they really can't. They want to do such and such for the day and they wind up blowing most of their day because some tax thing went wrong or some vendor has them on credit hold because they haven't been paid or some customer has gotten into financial trouble and they can't pay them and whatever. It's stuff like that that should drive them crazy. So with regular dashboards and you have people who are assigned specific task of telling the owner, here's the details of what's going on. And if the owner had any questions, then ask, especially. But for the most part, if you have really good procedures that everybody is on board with, that everybody understands that why they're distributed and everybody understands how their part affects other parts,
Yeah.
The business, for the most part, can operate on itself. You want the business owner freed up. You want the business owner freed up to do what they do best, which in most cases, at least the clients that I deal with, is going out and making money,
absolutely,
generating business.
Absolutely. Those conversations, not in all these operations.
Yeah. Why are you wasting your time fooling with cash flow?
Yeah. But don't you think too, like a lot of what we're talking about is about trust and distrust, right?
It's like, to an extent, the bigger thing is that they don't empower. Yeah. I guess it is trust. They don't trust the people to handle it on their own.
Yep.
So exactly. They get involved and micromanage and get into the minutia of all this stuff.
And for legit, and in a lot of cases, for legitimate reasons, they don't trust it. You know?
That's true. But they don't give them enough license to go out and just get the job done. They want, it's like De Niro in Casino. There's a right way, there's a wrong way, and there's my way. You know, they want it done their way. They want it done the way they think it should be done rather than just produce these results.
Yeah.
Without breaking anything, without costing a lot of money, just produce these results. I'm fine.
Do you remember this quote? It was from Flores, Fernando Flores, that 99% of inefficiency and waste in an organization is rooted in distrust.
I do know, now that you mentioned it.
And I first read that 15 plus years ago. I thought, I don't know if I agree with that. But now I'm like, man, I agree. It's spot on. I can almost always trace back execution challenges and breakdowns and problems to distrust, and we don't have a shared definition of what it is and how to build it, and we're not talking about it in that way. Usually we're not using the word trust. It's something else.
Yeah. And it's not like I trust you with my life, but I trust you to do your job.
Exactly.
Basically.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I trust you to do these two things that you're supposed to do.
I'm paying you for
do it in your own way, or maybe have some standard, but you know, there's a million ways to get from here to there.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And again, the whole thing about the employees know what happens is the employees get the sense that they're not, the way they do it is not going to be the way the owner likes it. They're not going to be trusted to get the job done. So rather than take action and maybe get hit over the head, here you go, Mr. Owner, Miss Owner, here's a cash flow problem. What do you want done?
Yep. They become order takers in a way.
Yeah. They don't want that. They get punished if they try and think outside the box, take some initiative, what have you. So the business owner gets drug into it a lot and they hate it. They'd rather take a whipping than have to be drug into that kind of crap.
Now you make me think about the whole realm of moods and emotions, right? What? Like the whole realm of moods and emotions now, like the emotion of fear. And it's so rampant in organizations in the American culture these days. It's so pervasive. It's crazy. And in my experience,
yeah,
you know, people are withholding, not acting, not saying, not talking, not playing their cards because it's some version of fear, typically.
Yeah. And again, that's created at the top and rolled downhill.
Absolutely.
And so you need a business owner who is willing to risk trusting his people, given that they have a very clear understanding of what they're supposed to do and how they interact with it. In other words, if you can get a well-designed network of conversations and you have competent people, and you give them permission to get things done without fear of retribution or fear of being scolded, punished, whatever, because they didn't do it the way you thought it should be done.
Yeah.
But that, as long as they produce results, I don't care. Without that at the top, you're going to consistently have dysfunctional organizations.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And I think if you can get done what you just said, which is, I like the way you articulated it. If you can get that in place, in large part, you don't even have to show up. You could go
the
play business golf.
The owner doesn't have to show up.
No.
In fact, that's what I go for. You want this place to run whether you're here or not.
That's right.
Would you like to be able to take off a month and go to wherever? You know?
That's right.
Right now, you can't not come into the office and you hate that because it's become such a have to. You basically created a company that you've now become a W-2 employee of.
Exactly.
And you take all the crappy jobs.
Yep.
All the crappy jobs come right to your desk. You don't have an organization that's functional enough on its own to operate without you constantly having to be interfering in it.
And then as a coach, the next question I'm going to ask is, so what's your role in that? So what are you doing in all of that network? How are you sticking your fingers in and talking that's creating that? Because you're creating that.
Yeah.
It's not happening by accident.
Right. And a lot of times it goes, I have my people. They're stupid.
Right.
I have some dumb employees. Why don't you get some not so dumb employees?
They wouldn't be able to.
If they did, they'd ruin them. You'd wind up writing the same thing over again.
They'd run them off. Yeah.
They run them off or they turn them into the doing what I have to do to get paid. And I'm not going to think, I'm not going to step outside. I'm not going to try and handle things on my own.
Yeah.
Anything comes up that's a problem. Yeah. Hey, Mr. Business Owner, what do?
Yeah. I'm thankful in a way, Carrie, that I think certainly more and more of my clients don't want to create that. And they're working hard not to create that. And I think more and more of the organizations I'm a part of don't do all the stuff that we're talking about now. They're consciously working to design something different. And it's hard and they bump up against themselves and others just like everybody else does. But I'm grateful that I'm not dealing with those kinds of companies 100% of the time. I couldn't do it. So.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah. But it's outside of the occasional narcissist, generally you can work with people up to a point.
Yeah.
They can see up to a point, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
And in a way, I think that's what I do with them. It's like I get called in as a coach because here's one way to say it. They realize the current habit or habits they have run their course. They need help. They need some new habits. I work with them. We help them at least start to get traction in that or set them in even a little better. And then that little learning journey that we've gone on is done. And it's okay, run, go. And I might get a call for a maintenance visit from time to time. But then usually I'll get a call down the road when that is exhausted itself and they're ready for their next version of growth or learning. You know, if that makes sense.
Especially as they bring different people into the organization or promote people up. Yeah, all this stuff. Needs constant work.
Absolutely.
Constant work, constant review, constant reassessment.
Yep.
Because what happens with businesses, people get into their jobs and they're doing what they're doing and they get on the track and they don't stop to reflect to even ask a question. Hey, could we be doing things differently here?
Yeah.
Is everything functional as well as it could be? What can we do to improve? It's just, they want to just keep making sales, keep making whatever. And they don't stop to assess. And to me, that's crucial in the business staying highly effective and functional.
That's one of the things that I actually help a lot of my clients do. I call it capacity management as opposed to time management, and that's probably one of the biggest issues I work with my clients with is helping them with capacity management. So it's literally getting detailed sometimes, like managing their calendar and their to-do list in an effective way, and then help them put systems and processes in place that help them do that so that they can create that space in their day-to-day calendar that they can reflect. Because most of them are so caught in the do loop, the doing, like you just said, there is no room for reflection. They aren't. And so that's one of my favorite areas is working with clients and helping them start saying no to things, getting rid of certain recurring things that have been on their calendar forever that they don't need to be at. We call it trap capacity, like freeing that up. It's this whole ball called capacity management. I love that topic and helping them. And then one piece of that is just freeing up that time to reflect. And here's the language I always hear. We need them to be more strategic and less tactical.
Right. Yeah. Because if you don't take the time to do that, you don't take the time to maybe reset the company's guidance, like where you're headed. If you don't design the future for your company, it's going to follow some drift to somewhere and you may not like where it's headed.
Exactly.
There's stuff buffeting the business all the time, whether it's the marketplace, competitors, technology, product development, et cetera, government regulations. All that stuff impacts the business. And not to mention people come and people go, which always changes the dynamics of the company to some extent. You see some of these guys, they wind up down the road, guys, gals, whatever, they wind up down the road and it's like, it's never been that, the business has never been that wonderful for them. It's never really provided more than comfortable income. But it's always been with a lot of work attached to it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it's those are the people who just grind it out and never look for how can I do something different here.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I think the pace of all of that stuff you just talked about, market forces, people coming and going, is getting ramped up more and more in today's world. Technology and all these and social media and all this other stuff. It's like it's just faster and faster. And if they, it's also why I often talk about how I can't even imagine trying to being a business owner and trying to do life all by myself, given all these forces and this pace. Like, how could you not at times realize I need help, and I need a coach, or I need a financial advisor. I need, I can't even imagine. I just don't think we can do our world these days without having some help from others.
Yeah, Julio Lala said it way back when. If it's a Mastering the Art of Professional Coaching course or Business Power and Strategy. He said, we've gone from a world where it used to be 150 years ago for you to go from the East Coast to the West Coast. Well, that took at least a few horseback, mm-hmm. even with mm-hmm. train, cross-continental train trip took a few weeks.
Yep.
Whereas now you can be on the other side of the globe in a matter of hours.
I know.
And the speed of technology and all the rest of this stuff. He said, we don't have time to adjust our mood for the situation we're headed to. But before you had all this time on the journey to get to where you're going, you had time to adjust your mood, have some thought about it and be prepared for it when you got there. He said, now you're in New York City, 6 hours later, you're in London, new culture, new mood, new everything. And you're going into whatever kind of, you haven't had time to adjust your mood to it. And his point was, he says that we operate in a world that does not allow rest. So you have to figure how to operate that in that thing. You have to take time to rest. You have to take time to reflect.
Yep. And I'm at the risk of sounding arrogant, I'm probably as good at capacity management as anybody I've met. And I have time to rest. And I also have to be honest and say, because I'm swimming in this cultural drift that isn't that, there are times where my head noise is like, am I not working hard enough? Am I not, do I need to hit it more? Do I need to do this? Do I need to do that? Because as Julio used to say, that soup I'm swimming in is rubbing off on me all the time. So it's a fascinating thing.
Sure. Listen, man, it's been great conversation. Really enjoyed it. We're going to do it again.
I would love to.
If you want to. So listen, I have a slide here. I'm going to share the screen. So let people know how to get in touch with you. Okay.
So if you can pull this PDF.
There we are. So they have, what are you looking for when somebody contacts you for executive coaching? What kind of issues are they having, I guess, typically?
Yeah. I think it's some of the things we talked about. I'll grab the one that we talked about last, which is I'm stressed and I'm overwhelmed. The demands are high and I can't find a way to get my hands around it. So that's the capacity management one is often the request I get. Sometimes it truly is self-awareness, Carrie. Sometimes I realize I can't see what I need to see, as weird as that may sound, and I need help, I need a coach. But again, a lot of it's what's not working is apparent through their execution. Like they realize like these results are not where we want them to be. My team's struggling, I'm struggling to work with particular individuals. I need some help in some way. So those are often the kind of the phone calls that I'm getting from clients to work with them in a coaching capacity.
And do your clients have to be local, or you can work with pretty much anybody in the continental US?
Yeah, with the virtual stuff now, in the US or globally, anywhere. I prefer locally because I'm an in-person kind of guy. I like to go sit down with them and see them and work with them. But more and more of my work is virtual these days.
So. Yeah, mine too. And that's only been the last, 2-3 years?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's been the last couple, 3 years that's really happened. It used to be, I had to physically go there. Yeah. But now with the internet, Zoom, all this kind of stuff, really easy to handle it. All right, man. Well, listen, thanks again for being on the podcast. And we'll try and schedule something in a couple, 3 months from now.
You're welcome.
Maybe we could do a round table with like you and Chalmers and Mike.
That'd be fun, man. That would be a lot of fun. You're welcome for today. I've been excited to do this and I really enjoyed the conversation. But that would be great. Get the four of us together and really chop it up, as the kids say these days. Yeah, that'd be
all
fun.
Right, listen, you have a great week. Thanks again. And we'll talk later.
You bet, Carrie. Take care.
Yeah, thanks you.